10 with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And on 3CR Digital and streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all. Welcome to our 302nd episode of Think Again. Excuse me. It's a program produced by Borderlands Cooperative, an organization working for social change for more than a quarter of a century. I'm Jacques Boulet.
And I'm Jennifer Burrell. And we're broadcasting live from the 3CR studio on the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation.
This week, we are discussing how we really, in Australia, are a one-party system insofar as international politics goes. And we'll be referring to two very different reports, one from Australia's so-called special envoy, supposedly combating anti-Semitism, but quite transparently aimed at suppressing shows of pro-Palestinian solidarity.
Yeah, that's right. And her report was recent report was explained really well on Green Left Radio in an interview this morning, and that's really worth listening to. So the other report we'll be referring to is by Francesca Albanese, who's special rapporteur on the occupied Palestinian territories with the United Nations, and her report highlights the complicity of international corporations in the illegal occupation and genocide in the Palestinian territories. So, bringing us back to Gaza, many of us are so frustrated and angry that Israel is still continuing to unleash its considerable military power on bodies, Palestinian civilians, apparently with impunity. We know Israel's breaking international law. This has been made more than clear by the International Court of Justice. We know the state of Israel is committing genocide, killing tens of thousands of innocent civilians, bombing schools and hospitals, and we see it in footage every day, children losing their parents, children losing their limbs, being carried to hospitals without that don't have equipment or medicine or anaesthetics or power or all of those things. So people being shot at who are desperately trying to get food. So where does Israel's impunity come from? Where is it getting the permission to go forward? And where are the considerable resources coming from? And why isn't it being stopped?
That's what we're being talking about today, starting with the international corporations that are profiting from this, the scourge of the world of international capitalism.
Yeah, that's right. So we've heard of disaster capitalism, which is a term when crises such as natural disasters and wars are used to push through neoliberal policies like deregulation and private solutions to social problems that bring huge profits to corporations. Yeah, so what we're seeing with Israel's onslaught on Gaza might even be called, what's the term I'm looking for? Genocide capitalism or illegal at least illegal occupation capitalism. Mm.
And it certainly funds the military-industrial complex, as we have been saying a couple of times in our past programs as well. Journalist Federica Marcy refers to Israel's expansion on Palestinian land as an example of colonial racial capitalism, an example of corporate entities profiting from illegal occupations. And we'll certainly come back to her article.
Yeah, so to illustrate this in horrifying detail, horrifying in terms of the spread of the profit-driven rot, a recent UN report by Francesca Albanese, which I just described, names hundreds of corporations that profit from the Israeli occupation and genocide in Gaza. These corporations and organisations include banks, technology firms, universities, pension funds and charities. And we can see in this UN report that the international profit-making web is vast, an insidious part of our international capitalist system.
Mm-hmm. With over 1,000 corporate entities named, some of the more familiar ones being IBM, Microsoft, Amazon, the Volvo Group, Korean Heidi, Hyundai.
Yeah, and Booking.com, Airbnb, Allianz's subsidiary PIMCO, mm-hmm. and banks including the UK's Barclay Bank and universities including MIT.
And Melbourne University.
Yeah. So Chris Hedges talks about this in an article which he aptly titles Profiting from Genocide. Mm-hmm. Profiting from Genocide. And there are evidently thousands of larger and smaller pigs with their snouts in this trough. And we will put the link to this report on our program page along with other articles and reports that we refer to in this program. But Chris Hedges recounts what Francesca Albanese, the author of the UN report, said. The genocide in Gaza has not stopped because it's lucrative. It's profitable for far too many. And the UN report makes it clear that these corporations profiting from the killing of civilians in Gaza, which is my phrasing, have a legal responsibility not to do so, mm-hmm. and not to mention any ethical responsibility. And this ruling comes from the International Court of Justice. It's illegal.
Yeah, which Australia certainly supported as it came into being. Mm. And again, as pointed out by Chris Hedges, the post-Holocaust industrialist trials and the South African Truth and Reconciliation Commission, they laid the legal framework for recognising criminal responsibility of institutions and businesses that participate in international crimes. So how ironic. Corporations profiting from the Holocaust have been recognized as having criminal responsibility. They incidentally include IBM, which has also been found to be profiting from the current genocide in Gaza. Mm. Chris Hedges explains that the new United Nations report makes it clear that decisions made by the International Court of Justice place an obligation on entities, and I quote, to not engage and or to withdraw totally and unconditionally from any associated dealings and to ensure that any engagement with Palestinians enables their self-determination. End of quote.
So corporations are legally responsible too.
That's correct.
Yeah. And on the home front, Australia would want to uphold the international rule of law, right? Mm-hmm. I say sarcastically. Our leaders often refer to the international rule of law in relation when criticising countries such as China and Russia.
Mm, that's correct.
But no, listening to our politicians and to our media, the timidity in calling out Israel for breaking international law is totally exasperating. Mm-hmm. The omission is so obvious to most, mm-hmm. like looking at the naked emperors in that emperor's wearing no clothes story.
That's right. We have been talking about all of this before in this program. In effect, we still do have a two-party system. Remember, we talked about that quite a number of times.
Yeah, even though there are other parties.
That's right.
But you're saying effectively it's a two-party.
Effectively, we have a two-party system, but that means also the two parties and the mainstream media, which we have referred to as a lethal tripartite system in one of our previous programs, I think about a year ago, they are all pretty much singing from the same songbook on Israel's illegal occupation and war on the Palestinian people, as they do on all important international issues anyway.
Yeah, like the continuing of burning fossil fuels.
That's right.
But what about the, as I mentioned before, Jacques, what about the roughly third of people who voted for independence and minor parties at the last Australian election?
Well, the Teals are pretty silent about it. Mm-hmm. The Lambie and Hanson twosomes, as well as the Greens, are the only ones sort of taking a stand sometime. hands, and of course in support of the more conservative voice. And Lambie sometimes, yeah, up, sometimes down. And so you have seen what is happening to the Greens. Their former candidate, Thomas, protesting in front of a firm making warfare parts for the IDF, being hit severely on the eye by police. You may lose it. And the New South Wales Premier, Labour Premier, saying that she actually shouldn't have hindered commerce.
Which is our point, really, hindering commerce.
That's right.
Yeah, so back to the sacredness of the private profit.
and jobs, which is, of course, the other side of what ALP usually comes up with. Yeah. And the Libs.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And I guess there's this idea of balance, which we're seeing amongst public discourses, really, with our politicians and the media. And we've talked about that before, where the idea, this sort of really phony idea of balance, where the truth is seen to be in the middle of what main players are saying, so including political leaders. Yeah. So if you have the Zionist lobby and Israel apologists on one hand saying that Israel is just defending itself, and the International Court of Justice and the United Nations apparently got it all wrong, and on the other side you have others pointing out that what Israel is doing is murderous genocide, is illegal, immoral, and inhuman. So if you've got those two sides, the truth must be in the middle, dead in the middle somehow, right? It can't be on one side. So that's the idea of balance. And it's like when Trump said about the infamous violent storming of the Capitol in the US in 2021, he said there were good people on all sides.
That's right.
So that's balance, right? So now people are afraid to say that Israel is committing human rights abuses, which is just a fact by international legal judgments. And how did that get to be seen as a radical statement, anti-Semitic even? And we'll talk more about that. Yeah. Mm. And you have to wonder what such balance would have looked like in Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. What would, just think about it as a thought exercise, what would balance have looked like in Nazi Germany if you were taking a stand in between what the main players were saying, all the main players were saying?
There certainly was and still is a lot of, not all Germans are like that, like Nazis, that means. Let's have a bit of a break because you can hear that we are really, really
getting fired
angry
up
about it all. There was, we will hear Give Me the Flute
by Hossam Hayek.
Okay. To Think Again on 3CR 855 AM on your dial and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. I'm Jacques Boulet, and before the break, Jennifer and I were asking again whether we can still claim to be a multiple or even a two-party democratic system. I know we have often in Think Again hovered around this question, notably when we mused about the lethal triangle of the two major parties and the media. The rather illiberal and certainly not labour-oriented mainstream media, in domestic matters, there still seem to be some differentiated positions, especially in the health and welfare areas. And except, of course, in the environmental matters, where all parties continue to support the dig, dig, dig mentality.
That's right.
But in international matters, it's all one-party agreement. are AUKUS, NATO, Israel Zionism, Ukraine. They are all, our stance in those matters are all okay and good and necessary. Russia, China, Iran, all bad. But as long as we need them to buy your stuff, let's wait and see about China, but with sort of a warning finger telling them to be nicer to their people.
Mm-hmm.
And that is in general fully supported, even expected, by about 80% of the mainstream media, across the spectrum from Sky News to The Age and the Sydney Herald. And even The Guardian seems to have difficulty finding the right headlines when reporting about Gaza and Israel. One case illustration of how the mainstream media operates was in last week's Saturday Age. It included no less than six items about Israel, Gaza, Palestine and the anti-Semitism conundrum, plus six short reader opinion pieces. So it was all over the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Three items dealt with the assumedly overwhelming explosion of anti-Semitism in Australia. Like 300% more was the call in the report. And the need to eradicate it firmly and forever. There were two articles that dealt with matters happening in Gaza and Jerusalem, and the editorial attempt to balance the need to eradicate anti-Semitism with the need to protect free speech was number six.
Mm-hmm.
So the three anti-Semitism articles, they sat together on page 6 and 7. And they included two reports about the arson attack on the East Melbourne synagogue and the Jewish restaurant in the city. And there was one article about the presentation of the report delivered to the government by the so-called anti-Semitism envoy, Gillian Segal.
Yeah, so Gillian Segal, that's who we were talking about before,
mm-hmm.
Who promotes a definition, by the way, of anti-Semitism that includes criticism of the State of Israel.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And wants our institutions, like universities and the ABC and SBS, I think, too, to be monitored for such a brand of anti-Semitism.
Mm.
So again, collapsing criticism of what the State of Israel is doing with the idea of anti-Semitism, which Jacques, you and my Jewish friends really oppose.
Just appalled that is happening, actually.
Yeah.
So featuring in that Saturday Age last week, the group responsible for the pro-Palestinian protest against the restaurant and who were not involved in the arson attack, was given the opportunity to explain itself. And it was titled, "We Are Not Harming People." But it then said, inside the group that stormed an Israeli restaurant.
So damning them in the heading.
Exactly. So below that article were members of the synagogue, in the East Melbourne synagogue. They could tell their story. And how was that titled? "Replace the darkness of hate with the light of communal harmony." So you can see the contrast, can't you?
Mm-hmm.
Finally, at the right-hand side of the double page came Segal's anti-Semitism report. And how was that titled? "Anti-Semitism Envoy Points to the ABC in a stouch over-reporting."
Mm-hmm.
So the subtle overall picture was still quite clear. Top of the page, the storming perpetrators. Bottom of the page, the innocent and peaceful victims. And to frame it on the right, how we can and should stamp anti-Semitism out across all of our institutions, especially out of our most trusted news source, the ABC.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the same Saturday Age, one of the two Israel-based articles reported about the IDF having its ways in Gaza. What was the title? "Airstrike Kills 10 Children Near Clinic." But as per usual, they explained the strike because the IDF were after a Hamas militant. And the second third-page article in the inside section details how, and that's really interesting, former Melburnian Daniel Luria is actively involved in displacing Palestinian families from their homes in East Jerusalem to make place for Jewish settlers. Luria's final comment concluding that article, "This land belongs to one people and one people only. It and Jerusalem runs through our veins, as does Israel, and there's nothing the world can do about it." End of quote.
Gee, nothing the world can do about it, which pretty much describes Israel's sense of impunity and hubris, really.
Absolutely. And in both articles, as per always, the Saturday Age painfully trying to create some sort of equivalence between the interests of the groups.
Yeah.
And the opinion, and that is a really, really interesting kind of a comment. The opinion page, or, you know, the weekly Saturday Age opinion thing, spells the balance devastatingly. It's titled, "Fight Antisemitism, but Uphold Free Speech. It is the balance that needs constant vigilance." So that opinion piece starts by affirming that antisemitism in this country is a problem. This is beyond argument, and it is deeply troubling. Having supported
them. I just want to insert in there, we did say the Scanlon Foundation's last survey, which covered this topic, found the racism against
Islam,
people of Islamic faith, is much higher than of Jewish faith. Totally. I just thought I'd
multiple
mention
times,
that.
Multiple times, that's right. So they basically, in that opinion piece, support the need for Sigal's report. But then comes a warning for balance and a masterstroke of obfuscation. And I quote them because it is a really interesting statement. "When more than 1,200 people have been massacred, when in retaliation 50,000 people, including women and children, are dead, when cities have been razed, when in effect a homeland has been destroyed, the edges of reason can be blurred. Indeed, they have been blurred so that thousands of kilometers away in Melbourne and Sydney, the actions of a government and its army have merged into the visage and facade of a people who have nothing to do with the conflict. They are targeted simply because of their religion."
Yeah, and I just noticed, Jacques, when you read that, the use of the passive voice, when cities have been razed, a homeland has been destroyed.
That's right.
But there's no agent doing these things. Yeah. So anyway, we also see the use of anti-Semitism, the use of the accusation of anti-Semitism to avoid any firm ethical standing about what's going on in Gaza and the West Bank or Jerusalem.
Absolutely.
Hand in hand with the lack of agency in all those statements.
Yes. Yeah. And our politicians, they playing the game. Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke dashing to Melbourne to declare that anti-Semitism has no place in Australia. And Julian Leeser, the Jewish Shadow Attorney General, declaring that what we are dealing with is a pathology in our society and about much darker things than what is happening in the Middle East. And an entire political top trio in Israel, President, Prime Minister and Foreign Minister, demanding that Australia should do much more to uproot entrenched anti-Semitism.
And to do something about hate crimes. It was unbelievable. Israel's government, responsible for the deaths of, conservatively, nearly 60,000 Palestinians in under 2 years, in violation of international law, killing and terrifying thousands of children, they want to lecture Australia about handling local hate crimes. I want to say, what the F?
Yeah, that's right. Well, this is Henry Reynolds, the famous, very well-known historian, Australian. This is his reaction to the Israeli politicians in this contribution in Pearls and Irritations this Tuesday. And I quote him, "Their comments are clear examples of high-end Israeli hypocrisy coming from leaders who have been systematically uprooting Palestinians in both Gaza and the West Bank, along with everything that makes their life possible, and Reynolds' reaction to the general pattern of Australian politicians' equivocation and obfuscation, especially wondering about the Shadow Attorney General Julian Leeser's suggestion that Australia's anti-Semitic pathology is darker than what happens in the Middle East? Darker than the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza? Really? What an extraordinary thing to say, says Reynolds. And he concludes that there is a deep and likely unbridgeable division in Australian society about the nature of Israel's onslaught on the Palestinians in both Gaza and the West Bank. And I finally quote him, "Questions about genocide, war crimes, ethnic cleansing and apartheid will continue to divide us. How could it be otherwise? It is clearly a totally inappropriate time to introduce a series of measures to exercise control over our universities, our schools and cultural institutions, all carried out under the banner of a deeply contentious definition of anti-Semitism, which for many people would be the means of rewarding the supporters and enablers of genocide and of shielding Israel from criticism. It would further undermine the autonomy of our universities, bringing in the sort of measures which Trump is using in America."
Yeah, and which the Nazi regime infamously did in the 1930s.
Mm, that's right.
Yeah, and it also might be useful for the politicians of our one-party, two-party system to carefully listen to what Margaret Reynolds has to say in her Pearls and Irritations essay titled Australian Parliamentarians Urgently Need Lessons in International Law.
And therefore, Meg Swartz, in that same Pearl and Irritation, she suggests that any strategy to combat anti-Semitism must also address Islamophobia, and probably call it anti-Islamism, and proposes against the Segal tendency in her report that real safety does not come from censorship. It comes from justice, solidarity, and the freedom to speak, to protest, and to dissent. And she wants there to suggest strategies that tackle anti-Islamism and anti-Palestinian racism, that include Jewish voices critical of Israeli government policy, to defend freedom of expression, and to avoid politicizing anti-Semitism. So that may, well, maybe the police...
Well, yeah, maybe the police have been listening to her just a little bit, Jacques, because I did hear in passing on the news a couple of evenings ago that the Australian government will be, they say they'll be responding to Gillian Seagull's report about clamping down on local anti-Semitism and closely monitoring our institutions, only in conjunction when they look at a report also on the misnamed Islamophobia, which apparently is due next month, and also a report from the Race Discrimination Commissioner. And it should be remembered that our existing legislation on racism covers these hate crimes anyway. So let's watch this space closely and certainly keep up the pressure.
Thanks for listening to...
The Victorian State Government is planning repressive new laws to restrict protest, including bans on protective masks and lock-on devices, increased police search powers, restrictions on symbols of resistance such as flags, and creation of so-called safe zones around religious buildings, putting significant areas of the CBD off limits. We must say no to this attack on democracy. Protest is a fundamental human right.
Thanks for listening to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio today. If you want to send us any comments about today's program, email borders@borderlands.org.au. Our past programs are available by podcast on a variety of platforms and via the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au.
Yeah, and meanwhile, to finish our program, please enjoy Milkumana by King Stingray.
Girl, I'm gonna get out of the cold, man. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.